Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Soundbite. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice 1 toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or Star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
It's true, you are listening to Soundbites. What could be more exciting than this? I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And Rob Linton is on the buttons, and we'll be taking your calls at the numbers you just heard. But before we do that, we are going to talk about the news, and we'll start with the Mac news.
Well, there's some interesting contradictory news out this week. Earlier this week, Apple was awarded a technical Grammy. It's the first time a computer company has been awarded a Grammy Award for their outstanding contributions to the music industry. A lot of the music produced and studio equipment and even music composition equipment is all done on Macs. Later in the week, Michael Eisner, CEO, chairman, and God Almighty at Disney, is blasting the computer industry, singling out Apple and Microsoft for making CDs so easy to copy and steal. So on one side, they're getting awarded by the music industry, and on the other side, they're getting blasted for threatening the music industry. So you can't win either way. What's interesting is that Disney is widely regarded as the Microsoft of movie companies. They are very, very quick to defend their own copyright. In fact, a couple of years ago, they sued a whole bunch of daycares for allowing people to bring in Disney films to show to daycare, because now it becomes a public appearance, and that's against copyright law. Mm-hmm. And a similar story came out last week that with the advent of ultra-small, ultra-portable hard drives like the iPod, people have been seen walking into computer stores, plugging into a computer, and stealing the software that's on the demo computers.
Get out. Yep. No way.
You don't even have to take the thing out of your pocket. You just slide a little cable up and connect into the computer, and it shows up on the desktop. So it's
quite astonishing.
So the computer store employees are now going to have to take a better look at what people are doing when they're playing with those demo computers.
Amazing. Dave, what's going on in the...
Well, there's another Nigerian scam, folks. If you folks remember back in, mid-80s, there was a big scam, and there's another one going out where you get an email. And this gentleman claims that he's representing this broker firm that is, off of South Africa. Makes you wonder right there. But what he's telling folks, and there's a few different iterations of it, is basically an individual has died. Their only relative is dead. The letter that I happen to get blatantly asked me to commit fraud because he'll set it up so I get 30% of $62 million. And all I have to do is say I'm a living relative of this individual.
That's more than Ed McMahon was going to give you.
Yeah, exactly. So if you get this email, folks, the old adage, if it sounds too good to be true, it is. And it's coming out in different flavors. I've seen one where they want you to fly to London where they can get you all the paperwork and all that set up. And it's just a big scam.
The one I got was just a guaranteed investment opportunity in Nigeria.
Yeah. So, it's just a different flavor and throw it away.
All right. And now listen carefully. Britney Spears, naked. That got your attention, didn't it? That's the whole point behind the latest virus and worm that's going around the internet. You get an email that says, click here, see pictures of Britney. And, of course, when you do, it attaches itself to all of the files on your hard drive, sends itself out to all the addresses in your Outlook address book, sends itself out via internet relay chat, and then erases all the files on your hard drive. So this is, of course, this has been done. Lots of stars get this.
Anna Kournikova
got it. Jennifer Lopez got it. So it's all out there. If you see these pictures, just, I suppose if you click on them, you get what you deserve. But the theory is just
more
just
work
erase
for me.
Just erase it. And we're going to go over the phones now. Where are the... Hey, don't try this at home.
We are professional.
We're going to go to the phones now, and we're going to talk to Steve from Brockport. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Hi, I want to know where I can get a free software firewall on the web.
There's a number of them. There's FireWire and Zone Alarm.
The best one, if you go to zonealarm.com.
Huh?
Zonealarm.com would be your best bet. And you can download, they have a version to pay for, but there's also a free version. If you download that, you're on your way.
They can get it right off of our webpage.
Right, and the link to that is on our webpage. Okie doke?
Okay.
Okay, great, thanks.
There's some low-flying planes there in Brockport.
Either that or he's out mowing the lawn.
Yeah, I know it. I don't know what that is. Or snowmobiling. I'd want probably not. Well, maybe out in Brockport. I don't know what it's doing out in Brockport. We're going to take a quick break now, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob on the buttons, and me, Nick, at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. And not just Nick Francesco, but also Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and Rob Linton on the buttons. We are talking to John from Gates. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I used to have an external CD burner, which I had saved lots of data on there. And since then, I bought a new computer, which has its own built-in CD burner. Every time I will play an old CD from the previous CD burner, I would get this message saying it's making my Windows unstable. And in order to correct it, I have to restore it to a previous day or before I played the other disk. If you can tell me what's causing that. And by the way, it's an HP, and they claim it's nothing to do with them. It's bringing up a message regarding DirectCD, and I don't have DirectCD.
That's what version of Windows are you
running?
What software did you use to write the old disks on the old drive?
It did have DirectCD.
There's two ways to write with DirectCD. One is called packet writing, which writes to the disk as if it were a floppy. And then the other is session writing, where you build a disk and then write it onto the drive. The packet writing with DirectCD isn't compatible with other CD players. You must have DirectCD installed to read a packet written disk. So that could be your problem. If you don't have DirectCD now, you can't read those old disks. Because
right. Windows XP has its own packet writing software, but it is unfortunately incompatible with DirectCDs. So if you don't have DirectCD taking over, then Windows is going to try to read it with their own packet writing software and cause all kinds of problems.
And if you try to install DirectCD, it may conflict with the one built into Windows.
Right. Windows is trying to help you by providing you with incompatible software. So
what should I do?
You're probably going to have to look for an update for that particular software. That's the whole problem. A lot of the stuff came out for XP, and they rushed it out there, and it says that it's Windows XP compatible, but
The safest thing to do in the long run, and this is going to be horrifyingly tedious, would be to take all of the files off of those old CDs and burn new CDs on the new system.
Yeah.
Or with the old computer and old drive again, take them off as packet written and burn them back as a session.
Or burn them back as a session on the old machine. But unfortunately, there's no easy answer because of the built-in software to Microsoft from Microsoft that you cannot either uninstall or disable.
CDs are so cheap nowadays. I mean,
it's the time data. and the data itself. If you can't get to it,
it's also data that I no longer have on my new computer. So it's something that I really can't get.
What you may have to do is read the data off on another machine. If you've got a friend who has a CD Creator still on their machine, you should have no trouble reading it off and saving it to disk again.
Thank you very much.
Sorry. I wish I had a better answer for you. I'm sorry. Our next caller is Frank from Rochester. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
Hello.
Yes.
You got me?
I got you. You got me?
Yep.
Okay, we win then.
Listen, I am putting 2000 on a laptop.
Yes.
And I want to partition the drive and put Linux on the other partition. So probably the best thing to do is to, I think, and that's what I want to check out with you, is to use the NT file protocol, because I get the option. But what do I give up if I do that?
If you use the NTFS protocol on the NT drive, then you cannot read it under Linux. Linux can't mount NT drives, NTFS, the NT file system. It can load the FAT file system. What you give up with the FAT file system are a lot of the security protection things that come with Windows NT. You can't protect individual directories or any of that stuff because that's all part of the file system. On the other hand, if it's your machine all by yourself at home, you don't need any of that security.
Yeah, well, I mean, it would only be on my own local network.
Mm-hmm. Does your laptop have a removable hard drive or easily removable hard drive?
Yeah.
Because that's one of the options. In fact, Nick has done it for his class.
Yeah.
He'll take one computer, put three or four hard drives in it, one with Linux, one with 2000, right. One with anything
else. Or if he can boot to a second hard drive.
The easiest thing.
Which is harder on a laptop.
Yeah, you've got a laptop, so that makes it hard.
Yeah.
You're right. That would you can do that, but that's the deal. You give up. If you want to be able to read the NT partition in Linux,
yeah,
then you need to use FAT32 as opposed to NTFS.
Then the other question is which one to install first and whose bootloader to use, NT or Linux?
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of a six and one half dozen.
There are sites all over the internet that tell you one or the other. Your best bet, Frank, is to check on the net. LinuxNewbie.org, Linux.org, places like that. We'll put those on the website at the next break.
I was given the information. I was given the opposite information that NT file format would easier transfer to Linux, and you're telling me exactly the opposite.
I don't think it will.
No, I don't think,
I don't
so
think it will. I don't think there's an NTFS loader for
Someone might have written
someone
one.
Someone might have
morning.
Written one, but that's exactly right. It just wasn't there yesterday. It doesn't mean it isn't there today.
Yeah, really.
But I haven't seen one, and I'm not a Linux expert by any means, although I really like the operating system.
One subsidiary question. If I, on my desktop, if I load Linux and transfer all my email and web browsing to that partition.
Right.
And if I can see the Linux files from Windows 98.
You can't.
I should be able to see some of them.
No. The Linux file system, either ext2 or the new ext3, cannot be read by any Windows product without special drivers, and I don't think there are any for the DOS-based versions of Windows.
Yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, well, what I was trying to do was because it was to build extra protection against viruses.
Now, what you can do, a third thing you can do is to add a third partition. A data part, it depends on how big your hard drive is, add a data partition. Now, you've got a Linux partition, an NTFS partition for NT, and then a third partition that is FAT32 that can be read by both.
Sneaky. Okay.
And then you can and then you can put your data on that partition, and both operating systems will be able to read it.
Or like what you do, though, is just to get another hard drive and be able to swap.
Well, he's got a laptop.
Yeah, when I'd say for a laptop, get a second hard drive for the laptop.
Yeah, but then he can't switch data. He can't swap data.
Yeah.
It depends on how easy the laptop's hard drive can be removed and swapped. Some of them can't very easily.
Right. Yeah. But that's, I think, your best choice at this point.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Our next caller is Ron from Rochester. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Yeah, how you doing? I just installed Windows XP Home Edition about a month ago. And all of a sudden, I'll be doing something and my computer will just reboot for no reason.
How much memory?
196.
That's a little light.
A little light?
Yeah, depends on what you're doing. They recommend 128 meg.
Right.
I like 512.
256 is better.
Yeah,
256 is better. See, the problem is you can run it. If you run one thing at a time, 128 meg should be okay.
Okay.
But if you run stuff in the background or you run more than one program at a time, you've got your browser open and a word processor open and your mail open, and you're going to start running out of memory. If the system reboots spontaneously, and by that I mean rather than like shutting down or anything else, just all of a sudden, bing, it reboots.
Right. That's exactly what it does.
You may have other problems. How's that?
I know for a fact that I'm not the only one having the problem.
In the house?
And I have two friends that also just installed XP, and they're also having the same problem.
There are a couple of things you need to worry about. One is take a look in your BIOS.
Okay.
And see if you have power management turned on in the BIOS.
Okay.
Turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
Windows XP also tries to manage the power, and if both are doing it, they conflict with each other.
And the energy saving, turn that off.
And the energy saving, turn that off. The next thing to check is if, in fact, your hardware is 100% XP compatible.
Every piece of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Everything you have.
Right.
All it takes is one device.
Right, okay.
So you need to check out www.microsoft.com/HCL for hardware compatibility list. That is also up on our site, or will be, if it's not now, will be at the next break.
Okay.
And you'll be able to check that and check all the components, not just the name of the component, sometimes the model number.
Okay.
You know, the 2001 yep. run is compatible, but the 2000 run isn't.
And very, sort of within the model, they can also have different revisions.
That's exactly right. So you got to be very careful.
Okay, one other quick question.
Very quickly.
How do I get to my BIOS?
All you got to do is when you're when you restart the machine.
Okay.
Most of them are hit the delete key.
It usually says somewhere on the screen, press F1 to enter setup or F2
or delete.
Okay.
Delete is the most common.
Okay. The Dell had a weird one. Control escape.
Yeah, but it'll say it's called setup or the BIOS or, you know, whatever.
As soon as I start my machine.
You'll see it as it's counting up memory.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Thanks a lot. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites, only on 1180 WHAM. It's true. It's true. You are back with Nick Francesco and with Dave Enright and with Steve Ray and with Rob Linton on the buttons and with Wayne from Rochester on the live line. Welcome, Wayne. What's your question?
Hi, fellas. Great show. Listen
Thank
to
you
every week if I can.
Thank you.
Listen, I have Windows XP and I have a CDRW, and what I'm trying to do is I've got a lot of pictures on the computer that I want to put on a CD. Now I was able to do that, but I can only play that CD back on the computer. I want to be able to burn what I can play on a DVD, and I don't quite understand a lot of the terminology they use, but what do I have to do to burn one that I can play on a DVD?
You need special software and or special hardware. Many DVD players can also play a format called VCD, which is video CD. It's real big in Asia, but never caught on here in the States much. So you can take an ordinary CDR and burn it in VCD format and play on and see the pictures on a DVD player. DVD players will do CD audio just fine. It's the CD video they have trouble with.
Well, yeah. I have Nero. I have Easy CD Creator.
Yeah, they won't do it.
I don't know which offhand does VCD format.
Nero will do DVDs, but I don't know that it'll do.
Right, and
no.
To actually burn a DVD to play on a DVD player in movie format, you need a DVD recorder.
Yeah, because I've got a client that tried both.
Right, right. I'm not interested in the, you know, in the AVI type. It's not motions. It's just
the picture.
Stills, right. Is there any freeware that you know of that is available?
Right. You might want to search the web.
I know Toast to Deluxe, or actually Toast to Titanium now, can do it on the Mac. And Toast is the Mac version of Easy CD Creator from Roxio. But I don't, maybe Easy CD Creator Deluxe can do VCD.
Yeah, I think
format.
I have to have like a version 5 or something. I only have 4.
Right.
And that version 4 is not that old.
If you have an SVCD compatible DVD.
S is
in Sam, V as in Victor, CD as in compact disc.
Yeah.
You can get from the Nero software site, which is at Nero.com. That's also listed on our website, soundbites.org. Get there through the WHAM website, WHAM1180.com. You can download something called the MPEG-2/SVCD plugin, which apparently lets you burn SVCD compliant discs.
Now, is that on certain model of drives?
It doesn't. I haven't read the whole thing, but you should probably look through this and see what it has to say. They'll also sell you an unlimited version, but this one seems to do.
Well, I guess if I have to buy it, I have to buy it. I was just wondering. Yeah. I got three burning softwares now, and I thought maybe I just didn't understand if one of them. I didn't know if it was done as data. Or something
It's done as data in the VCD
special format.
Right, the VCD format.
What you want to do is go to Nero.com.
Right.
and take a look through what they have. It talks about what you need and how it works and what you can record and not record, and that'll give you a little mini education.
And make sure you check it, make sure it'll work on your particular model of a CD burner.
Right. Nero.com is also, the Nero software is already listed on our website.
And the Roxio.com site for Easy CD Creator
right.
Deluxe.
Right.
All right, one other quickie.
Very
fast. I was trying to do some, hook this thing up as a network, and I have a router, and am I to understand in the way that is done that you have to go from your cable? I have cable. I have a cable modem into my computer, back out of my computer.
No. It goes from your cable modem into the WAN side of the router.
Sometimes it's called uplink.
On the router, router slash hubs, it's always called the WAN.
Almost always.
Yeah. And then your other PCs plug into, say, if you got like a four-port router, like through Linksys, the cable modem goes into the WAN and the other PCs, whether you got one or four, plug into the other one through four ports.
And it should work that way, huh?
Yes, it should. And it's not?
Okay.
Sometimes you've
got... It sounds so skeptical, Wayne.
You've got to play around with them. They don't always, just by clicking them in, sometimes you've got to shut everything down, reset both the cable modem and the router.
In the right order. Turn everything off. Turn the cable modem on. Wait a minute. Turn the router on. Wait a minute. Turn the computer on.
And then they'll click. But sometimes it might take two or three times to doing that.
Right. And that's assuming that you've got the computer set up to do automatic everything.
DHCP, yeah.
Right.
Right. Okay. Well, I have a laptop I was going to try and share the connection with.
You can do that. Yeah, that's what these things are for. Not a problem.
Okay.
I do it all the time.
Same here.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Our next caller is Abram from Rochester. Welcome. What's your question?
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, my name is Abram Kara.
Abram, sorry.
Yes. I recently put together a new computer myself, first one.
Good for you.
Having some problems.
That's half the fun.
Yeah.
Really?
I bought a new case, 300 watt. I bought a new board is Elite Group K7S5A.
Okay. What's your question?
Well, I can't do sustained data transfers. If I'm installing, any software as it's running, it, goes fine for about half of the way, and then it just stops down to a crawl. And
10-to-1 ad, you built the system yourself?
Yeah.
And how much memory did you put in?
256 megs of DDR.
And is it, all right, is it two sticks or one?
One stick.
All right, it's 10-to-1 ads, it's been my experience, because we ran into it
with my new machine.
What it is the memory.
Okay.
And you might want to double check the specs on that board to make sure there's different flavors of DDR memory.
At different speeds.
And different speeds. So you want to double check, because memory has a lifetime guarantee, but double check the manual and make sure you've got the correct memory. And if it is, you might want to send it back and tell them this one is defective.
Yeah, because what the problem was in my machine is that the first bank must have registered DDR.
Oh,
the rest of the banks, they don't care.
Yeah,
right, but the first bank must be registered.
Sometimes the slots matter and the order you fill them matters.
Right. So you want to take, and it only said that in one little teeny, we broke our heads against the wall for like 2 days before Dave noticed in the manual, wait.
It's got to be registered. And you sit there and say, this is registered memory. No.
I filled out my registration card.
Yeah. But, it's been my experience. When the software won't load correctly, and I've run into three machines now with this problem, if it won't load, programs or anything else, it's always pointing towards the memory.
Really?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Check it out.
All right, thank you.
Abram. Our next caller is Dan from Fairport, a name I can pronounce. I have a friend named Abram, and I thought, I saw it. That's what you never know. Dan, what's your question?
Hi, guys. Love the show.
Thank you.
Listen, I've got a number of problems on my PC, and I've decided the best thing to do at this point is to...
Shoot it.
Erase it.
Okay.
Format the drive and put everything back on.
Yeah.
And I have a vague idea of some of the things that are involved.
Uh-oh.
In that, but I'd like you to kind of run through the checkpoints so that I have everything lined up when I do this.
What type of machine is it? What type of machine is it?
It's an e-machine, but actually I have another machine that's a little older and a clone, and when I get done doing the e-machine, I want to do the same thing on the other unit.
The e-machine, I Did it come with a restore CD?
Yeah, a lot of it.
I have a restore CD. I have the original Windows 95 CD for it, and then I have the Windows 98 upgrade that I've
installed. If you put that restore CD in and restart the machine,
yeah,
it's going to wipe out everything. It's going to reformat the hard drive and literally start from day one.
Restore it as it was when it came from the factory.
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Just running that CD again does all that?
Mm-hmm.
You'll get all the same stuff that you had in it before, whatever came when you first booted it up, whatever software was on it, et cetera, et cetera. You will lose everything else, including your data.
But so it will actually reformat the hard drive.
Everything.
Sometimes there's options. Do you want to just refresh your current Windows, or do you want to reformat and install it from scratch?
Right.
Say that again?
Sometimes the restore CDs will have an option of just refreshing the current Windows. It just overwrites Windows again.
Reinstalling some software.
Or erasing the hard drive and wiping everything and restoring it from scratch.
Yeah, which is what I want to do.
There you go. Right.
Make sure your
data
are
backed up.
Now,
what about on the older machine where I don't have the restore CD?
There you'd have to put in a boot disk, format it, and then load Windows from the CD.
But what about the commands for reformatting the hard drive?
How format do slash C.
Format space. Right. We got to go. I'm sorry. We got to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob, me, Nick on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. It's true. We're back. And we're going to talk about the poll first. You can get to our poll very easily. Go to wham1180.com. Down on the lower right of the main page, lower left of the main page, you'll see our smiling faces. Go there. You can leave a comment for us. Please note that's a comment, not a question. We don't answer questions sent to us through that form. We have what we call lives. So we answer
questions. When did you get a life?
Yeah, I downloaded it.
Oh,
I'll give you a later. Get a life dot something. And you can send us a comment there about the show. Or you can get to our website, which is soundbites.org, and we have a weekly poll. Last week's poll was about Media Player. One of our news items last week was that Media Player, and Microsoft, by the way, admitted that this week, Media Player tracks where you've been. It not only keeps a list of every CD, track, and DVD, and movie you've downloaded from the net, and everything else that you've watched on your hard drive, but it also sends all of that information, including your unique identifier, to Microsoft. They say they have no intention of doing anything with those data.
And we got some swamp land for you, too.
Yet. But we talked about whether or not you use Media Player, and we had 267 of you vote. Thank you so much, each and every one of you. And the question, the answers were 43% of you said only when we're forced to use Media Player. 21% said they use it to play everything. 16% said only by accident, which was my favorite choice. 12% said not on your tin type. 7% said to play DVDs only, and CDs only, and nobody said one vote to play DVDs only. 267 of you voted. Thanks very much. This week's poll is a little different. This week's poll is about downloading MP3s. I just thought I'd ask a little bit about that. 52 of you have voted so far, and the choices are as often as possible, regularly, once in a while, only the ones I pay for, and never at all. So far, 52 votes are in. Almost half of you have lied. Almost half of you have voted never at all. And we'll be keeping that poll up all week, of course, at soundbites.org. So please, take a couple of minutes sometime during the week to get online and vote in the poll.
We also want to encourage folks to sign up with the forums there.
Right.
If you do have the questions, and if you do sign up, please put in your city and state. You have three geeks here that are curious on where you live. We're not going to resell.
We just want to see where the show's getting now that we're on.
We got to fill out our little pin board.
We got to fill up our little pin board. And before we go on, I just want to say that in the forums, you'll find some people who are interested in having archives of the show. And apparently this thing has taken a disturbing, although humorous, new turn. I was at the public market today, plug something else. My wife and I have a coffee stand at the public market, Flower City.
Great coffee.
Thank you. And as I went in the door, there was a bumper sticker about the sound, about the lack of sound bites archive. Clearly, that was done by Argyle, since Bon Vivre lives in, I think, Buffalo.
Yeah,
and so it was probably Argyle. I want to tell you, I'm very disturbed by that archive. same thing. I'm very disturbed by that because you were at the public market and didn't drop any off for me at my stand. So I'm just very angry about that. Otherwise, I think it's very funny, but I'm very happy that I didn't
home
get
yet.
Any. No, I haven't been
Maybe
home.
Maybe they're there.
In my mailbox or pasted all over my house.
Or when we go down and go back to our vehicles in the parking lot.
Yeah, right. I think it's time to go back to the phones now, and we're going to talk to Phil from Batavia. Welcome, Phil. What's your question?
Thank you, gentlemen. The thing with the media player, that's just proof that Bill Gates is the next James Bond villain to take over the world.
Anyway,
with that comment, you know I'm a Mac user.
Apparently you are, yes.
About that, I am a Mac user. I'm wondering, I read things about how the G4 is equally as fast as a Pentium, like 1.5 gigahertz, and the G4s are like 800-something megahertz. Why? How come they say they're faster and
one's
on a megahertz, one's on a gigahertz?
They're calling it the megahertz myth, that megahertz is not a good way to measure CPU performance.
On any platform. PC.
And Intel is running into the same issues now with AMD as a direct competitor on the Windows side. A lot of people liken it to cars. You know, I have a Toyota, and my red line's at 10,000. Someone else has a Ferrari, whose red line is at 8,000. Does that mean my Toyota is faster?
Also, the cubic displacement of the engine is less important than the torque you can. Generate or the gearing of the gearbox. Those things, you know, the raw number of cubic inches or amount of horsepower is way less important than the gearing of your crash box.
The specific case in CPUs is what's called pipelining. How many instructions per cycle can each chip perform?
Right.
And the Motorola IBM developed PowerPC processor can generate 2 to 3 times more instructions per cycle than an equivalent Pentium 4 processor. So even though the Pentium clock is faster, the G4 can process more instructions in the same time. So it works out in raw performance that the G4 is about twice as fast as an equivalent Pentium. So what happens, especially with Apple's benchmarking, is they don't talk about specific benchmarks and megahertz and whatnot. They talk about real world applications. You know, Photoshop can run a filter twice as fast as a Pentium. So you can get more real world work done in a day, especially for graphic intensive programs like Photoshop and Final Cut and media type programs.
Well, that's why both manufacturers, though, are trying to get away from, saying this is a 1.4 gigahertz. AMD and the other manufacturers are calling them just XP chips.
Right. There's a really nice example on Apple's website that I have. I'll find the URL and we'll post it. But it's a pretty detailed description of how pipelining works and why the PowerPC is faster than the Pentium.
Right.
All right. Thank you very much,
gentlemen. Thank you so much. Our next caller, Vito from Chilai. Vito, what's up?
Oh, hi there.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a question which relates to a CDR burner. And here's the problem. If I save a page from the internet, it'll come across as a folder which has the GIFs in it and an HTML component to it. If I save that on my hard drive, everything's fine. Open it up, I can see it.
Right.
If I do a packet writing with a CDRW, I can see it. If I do a CDR, on the other hand, I get the text, but I never get the images.
When you move, that's interesting. When you move stuff over, you're saving stuff off a web page.
That's right.
When you do that, you're using Internet Explorer?
Yes.
There are two ways you can save it. One is a complete web page, and one is HTML only. What you end up with when you say complete web page is it not only grabs all the pieces and parts, but also changes the URLs so that you not only get the page, but it also puts a folder out there with the images on it from that page.
That's right.
And changes the URL. So you're saying even when you pull that folder over, it doesn't work right?
Not when you do a CDR.
Are the files written to disk, but then the page doesn't display correctly, or are the files not actually written on the disk?
the file, everything's written on my hard drive, and I can open it up from there and see everything that I've collected, which is perfect. And if I do a packet writing on a CDRW, everything's perfect. If I do it onto an iOmega zip disk, everything's perfect. But if I do it on an CDR, I never get the images. So
Right, the images don't display on the website?
The images don't display.
But they're there on the hard drive.
They're on the hard drive.
I mean on the CD.
On the CD, right.
They're physically there. Do they show up as broken icon links?
No, they're just blanks. The spot where they belong is just blank.
That's weird.
Sounds like it's not copying the URL right.
Yeah.
But why would it change it?
Maybe because the zip drive is just doing a flat copy, whereas the CDR is trying to do an interpolation.
It shouldn't.
Yeah. Right. It shouldn't, but
that's
the way it's doing
really
the packet,
strange.
The way it's doing the packets.
Okay. Can you see the link? When you point to that blank area where the graphic should be, do you see the link to that graphic file?
I don't have it in the computer right now,
okay.
but you're asking me if there's a blank spot and I bring my cursor over it?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I believe there's nothing shows up.
You should see a link. You could try doing a refresh, or there's if you right-click on that blank spot, there should be a load image command. And that should load the image again, which would mean there's something wrong in the way it's saving the link file.
Yeah.
It may be trying to look back at the internet and not look at the local disk.
That's weird, though, but he can do it to a zip disk.
Yeah, what I would suggest you do, and this will you're going to have to do a little detective work. What you do is take a look at the actual raw HTML code. Do me a favor. I'm not going to promise to find an answer for you, but I'll try to find some time to play with this. Email me the HTML page. I don't want the images. I don't need the images. From one that works correctly and one that doesn't.
Well, they all work correctly depending on how I view them. If I view them on the burned disk, which is done with Nero, they don't work correctly. So I don't know how to email you that.
The same page doesn't work depending on how you make the disk.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Copy it off the disk. Copy the one that doesn't work back off the disk and email it to me.
Okay.
Copy the one that does work off that disk and email it to me.
Okay, great.
And I'll take a look. I'm not going to promise to find anything, but I'll at least take a look.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.
That's very weird. I'll at least take a look at that. No promises. Our next caller, Greg from Chi-. Things are falling off the wall here. Our next caller, Greg from Chi-Lai. Welcome, Greg.
Oh, thank you. It's good to get on the show.
It's good to have you on the show.
Pardon?
It's good to have you on the show.
It's been an interesting show today. I've made a lot of notes.
Good.
My particular question is on recording and digital recording through...
Everybody's recording this week. Go ahead.
This is audio.
Right.
I have the Sound Blaster PC... PCI 128 mixer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it says cannot load some components. And when I want to record, Real Audio comes up and says it'll record for me. But the Sound Blaster itself should have a record component with a microphone input level, et cetera.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not getting that.
What it sounds like is that either you have the incorrect driver for the Sound Blaster, or the driver did not load correctly.
Or Real, when it installed, wiped out the Sound Blaster.
I personally have not a fondness for Real. But that's just me, I'm sure. What I would suggest you do is reinstall the drivers for the sound card.
Okay.
They should overwrite. Now, that may break Real.
He might want to get rid of Real.
And it would be best to get rid of Real.
I won't cry over that.
Right. Get rid of Real. Uninstall Real and see if it restores the original files.
Okay.
Then, if that doesn't work, reinstall the drivers for the Sound Blaster.
Okay, that would be saying goodbye to them and then reinstalling them.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you can do an update driver thing.
Oh, yeah.
Possibly
okay.
Even,
yeah.
Possibly even download the latest driver.
Yeah,
check out
the Sound Blaster webpage and download the right drivers.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We are going to take another break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, on Sound Bites, only on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back. We are here taking your phone calls on computers, and we're going to prove that right now by talking to Victor from Rochester. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. I have a couple questions.
Mm-hmm.
Can your show be heard online?
Okay, well, next question. Okay. At the moment...
What's your handle now?
Argyle?
Argyle? No. We're in negotiation. It may be a long and involved negotiation.
Stay tuned.
It may involve sledgehammers, but it is a transition phase. Clear Channel is beginning to do that sort of thing. They're going through their entire... set of
stations.
We're not at the top of their list, so we aren't first, but they are talking about doing that.
So, well, the bottom line answer is not currently.
Okay. Stay tuned.
I have I get an error message, and I wrote it down. I'd like to tell it to you, and maybe you can help me out.
Sure.
It says, a fatal exception, OD, has occurred at 0028:...
And the numbers are not important.
What's
after that?
VXD SYM TDI 01 plus 0001 BCFE. That's ring a bell?
SYM TDI.
TDI, yeah.
T as in Tom?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. Off the top of my head, that's not
an error. Yeah, it's one of your library files. In this case, a VXD. Usually, we talk about DLLs, but yeah. This is a VXD. Is probably corrupted. Sometimes the error message doesn't indicate the file that is corrupted, but just the file that noticed the problem. So what Nick is trying to do now is find out what that VTM file actually is.
See, the problem is it may be for a device that's not on your on this system.
Look at Google.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the trick is finding out what the file corruption actually is. Which operating system do you have?
Windows 98, second edition.
You can go to the Start menu, choose Run, and type SFC.
Yeah. SFC.
That will run the system file checker.
Mm-hmm.
It will scan through all of your Windows system files and see if it can find one that's corrupted. And if it does, it will restore it from the CAB files.
What version of Windows are you on?
98, second edition.
Yeah.
So that's the first place to start.
Norton Antivirus.
Norton Antivirus.
Yeah.
Symantec.
Yeah.
Yep. SYM, Symantec.
Yeah. Yep. Time to reinstall that.
Oh, reinstall. Okay.
There you go.
Uninstall and see if the error goes away. And then reinstall it and make sure you check for any current updates with their live updates.
Because if
function.
That's not running, it's very possible that the program itself is not working, and that would be, well, bad.
And a lot of times the first thing a virus does is disable your virus protection.
Right.
Okay.
So that may be what happened.
Well, thank you very much for help.
Sure.
Goodbye.
Our pleasure. Our next caller is Patrick from Batavia. Welcome, Patrick. What's your question?
Well, first of all, a comment, then a question.
Sure.
While I was waiting on hold, I mentioned to someone, I'm at work, I mentioned to someone that I was listening, or I'm talking, going to call them the sound bites, and I said, what's their website? So I gave out the website address, so I actually answered a question while I was waiting on hold.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
Okay, my question is...
I love it when other people answer our question.
Yeah, really.
Well, you can't be everywhere.
No, that's true.
But my question is, I know about getting viruses through emails and the most common ways, but I had heard recently that it's possible through... some files like, not Napster, but some of the newer...
MP3s?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah?
What?
And the other, and related to that, too, is it possible through websites to get viruses?
Oh,
Nadima was the biggest one.
NIMDA.
That all you had to do was visit a website that was infected, and you were infected.
The deal here, Patrick, is that there are lots of ways that Microsoft has made your life easier.
Uh-huh.
By allowing various programs to control the operating system. That's right. I'm trying to be politically correct here. What that means is that almost any program from anywhere can control your operating system for you. Isn't that nice? And so stuff you download from the web, stuff you download and play in media players, stuff that you get in your email and click on can all... run stuff in your system.
Without you knowing it.
The people who are most often taking advantage of that are the virus writers.
Uh-huh.
So you need to keep your antivirus software up to date and never, ever, ever click on anything that you get in email. I don't care how enticing it is or who it came from.
Even pictures of Nick Francesco?
Even pictures of Nick. If you want to see pictures of Nick Francesco, you can go up to my website. And
but
you
now,
don't have to download
right.
that.
If you have Norton antivirus updated and that, you shouldn't be as concerned.
Not as concerned,
right.
But it's a leapfrog thing, right? As soon as the antivirus writers protect you from one, a new one comes out. They protect you from that one, a new one comes out. So
now, does the firewall help at all there?
It can, but if stuff goes out through any of the ports you've got automatically open, like port 80, so you can get your web pages, or port 110, so you can get your mail.
Yeah, firewalls help against other types of attacks, an actual direct attack on your computer.
But one of the biggest fallacies, though, folks fall into is they think, well, I don't open anything from things people I don't know. Well, hello, that's how Outlook, it goes into your address book, so people are getting, just like you are getting it from folks that you know.
Yeah.
So, but as far as this website thing, then you don't know if you ever could get that?
If you disable ActiveX controls in the browser, and you disable Java and JavaScript...
But that'll reduce a lot of things that you can see, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
if you go to websites with the pretty pictures and all the animations, then yes, it reduces it. If you go for information, then you still see all your information. But there's no two ways around that. It's one or t'other.
And the other issue with the file sharing programs like Nutella and the old Napster is that someone would put up what they claimed to be a song, but it was really a virus. So if you see one of these files listed that's only 10K or 20K...
606K.
Right, it cannot...
is the latest number.
It cannot be a music file because they're just a lot bigger than that.
Right.
Oh, so anything really small then is kind of a red flag.
Right.
Right.
Go.
Wow, life has gotten really tougher.
Hey, if it was easy, anybody could do it.
Okay. Thanks, guys. I really enjoy your show,
both on the
radio and television.
Thank you so much. I love to hear that.
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break now so that we can update our antivirus software. You should, too. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob, me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites, only on 1180 WHAM. Okay, that's my favorite background music.
Yeah, I like that.
But I'd like to apologize to all of those of you who know the contact is not a verb. We're talking to Steve from Rochester. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
It's more of an answer to you guys.
I love the partial answer. Mm-hmm. Sure.
It'll give you at least the element, sort of like the sandwich theorem where you can trap a function between two known functions.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay. When he's trying to write to the CDR and read the URLs, I've had that problem, haven't been able to completely solve it, but here's a tip. If you use the send to function and try to remove the URLs and the folder to another drive, it works more reliably than if you try to use a drag copy. If you try to use a drag copy, you'll break all the links.
Of course.
Save it. If you have it saved on drive C and you want to save it on drive A, open the web page on drive C, call save as to drive A. It will remove and link the correct. The problem with the CD-ROM is a little more complicated. The only thing you could do, perhaps, is create a phony CD or a fake CD with the same drive letter as the one you're going to burn.
Right.
If you just burn it onto an image and then it changes, for example, from drive C or D to drive F, it won't work.
Right. See, that's why I wanted him to send me the two files. I wanted to see if one of them had a full URL and the other had a partial URL.
Because there's a set
Well,
lower.
It'll have the URL. It'll probably both have the URL for, like, for example, decolon and backstroke or whatever.
Right.
But since the files don't live on decolon backstroke, they live on, say, E colon backstroke, all the links are
broken.
And when you put it back into another CD player, it might have a different drive completely.
Exactly.
There's
so here's
a way
the
to
problem.
Re-
you need to be able to either
it
use,
be
like,
relative.
Like maybe a fake CD program to create an image of the CD, burn the fake CD image to a CD that contains now a fixed drive letter and directory, and then you should be able to open them. Because I've had the same problem. I've using a program called Image Site Grabber that creates a linked file, like a browser that allows you to store the images and a browsing file. When you try to move that to another disk, all the links break.
Okay.
And
right.
he's got the same problem. By trying to put it to the CDR or the CD,
that
you lose
sense.
All it.
Right. I've had a couple that do the same thing, but do grab it as relative links, and so no matter where you put it, it works.
Yeah, that's what you need to do. You need to use relative linking, but the problem with the damn CD is that it's not writable, so you can't even open it up and then change the URLs manually.
Although
I've done that on
On the radio, we try to say dang CD.
Yeah, dang CD.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. But you can't change it. So what you need to do is change it ahead of time. So like I said, if you tried to create a drive using the fake CD or something like that, perhaps then you could move it to the CD. The best you could do is then take the raw images, put it on the CD, then when you want to use it, put it back onto it, create a local browser file. But other than that, I really haven't been able to solve it for all of AZT.
That's great.
Thank you much.
Great answer, Steve. Thanks a lot. Our next caller, Kelsey from Rochester. Welcome, Kelsey.
Welcome to you. How are you today?
I'm dang peachy. How are you?
Good. I have a few questions, actually. And I have to confess that I don't know too much about the computer part of my computer.
Okay.
And it's a shame you have to, also.
You know?
Yeah.
Last week I received an error message that I'd never seen before, and it was a stack error.
Mm-hmm.
I have five stacks, and they were full. It didn't give much information. I went into help and everything else, and the word doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's a very low-level error deep into the guts of Windows.
So it doesn't... Well, the odd thing was, when I went to shut down, my system wouldn't.
What version?
It's 98.
Okay.
And then occasionally since then, it won't shut down. I mean, hours, and I have to manually turn off the power.
Yeah. One thing you can do to try to fix this is you can go to the start command and choose run and type msconfig. One of the files that comes up is the config.sys. In that file, you may see a stacks equal line and increase that number a couple. If it isn't there, you may need to add it.
No, if it is there, if she's running Windows 98 Second Edition, technically, you don't need the auto exec and you don't need the config file. They were eliminated once you got 98 Second Edition. The other thing, though, with her shutdown program, and I think I'm going to have to give you the file so we can put it up on our webpage, there is a known issue with Windows 98 Second Edition in the shutdown. And there is a patch up there. What I'll try to do is I'll get the file to Nick. We'll post it up on our webpage. You can download it and run it, and it will correct this shutdown issue.
Also, in that msconfig program, there's an advanced button that takes you into a list of other options. One of those options is to disable fast shutdown, and you want that to be checked. Microsoft tried to make shutting down faster,
and it doesn't
work, and you end up not shutting down at all. So there's an option to disable fast shutdown.
Okay, I'll try that, and I'll look for that that patch also.
There you go.
Great. I have another question too, and this is something I've just seen recently. What is the difference between antivirus protection and virus definitions?
Antivirus definitions are used by antivirus protection programs to find viruses.
So you need the definitions for accurate protection.
Right. The definitions are the list of all the viruses the program can catch. So what typically happens is every couple of days, the antivirus companies release new definitions with new viruses listed.
Usually every Thursday, I tell my clients to check.
Yeah, and if there's a big one, it's twice a week. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Litton on the buttons, and me, Nick Francesco, on America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Billy Mead is some sort of poll on our favorite lead-in, which is favorite music, favorite...
There you go. There's next week's
funny
poll.
Thing. No, it's got to be different because I got to put them up there for people to hear. Of course, we don't. Never mind. our next caller is Marianne from Rochester. Welcome, Marianne. What's your question?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I'm a novice at this computer business.
We all start there.
Very, very novice. And the terminology, I have no terminology, but I think I can explain what's my problem here.
Okay.
I went to put in a CD on my computer. I have Windows 95.
Hold on, Marianne. Okay. Before we get any farther, could you turn your radio off, please?
Oh, yes. Just a second.
That's kind of...
Sorry about that.
Yeah, we can hear it in the background.
Kind of making us a little crazier than we already are. So go ahead.
Anyway, what I did was I tried to download a CD on a game program.
Right.
Okay. I have Windows 95.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened, I put not knowing, I put the wrong CD in.
Okay.
Window 95, and I'm putting in a DOS 3.3.
DOS 3.3, yeah.
Disk.
Right.
Okay, that I found on sale. So I put this in thinking I'm going to have this bridge game all set into the program.
Right.
Well, the red light went on when the disk was accepted. A red light flashed on, and then it went off, and then there was just nothing. So
well,
I went to my computer.
Right.
And I saw a bridge, but it wasn't highlighted like in the accessories there.
Right.
It wasn't highlighted like the rest of the things were.
Right.
So I clicked on it.
Right.
And nothing happened. So I took the disk out and put it back in. The same thing happened. I went to my computer and I clicked on it again. I did that a few times. Well, all of a sudden, everything went black. And this white print came up, and it told me that the following file is missing and corrupted. Something about Windows was detected, a registry configuration error. Choose safe mode to start the window.
Mm-hmm.
Now it shows me what files are missing.
Right.
What do I do?
At this point, I think your best bet is to take it to somebody, Marianne.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hate to tell you that, but it sounds like there's more than one thing wrong, and fixing any one of those things in the wrong order would be not a good idea. So my suggestion is you find a reputable dealer and take it to them and have them take a look at it.
Because it should be a relatively easy fix.
Oh, it should be.
Yes, because when you put that disk in other words, that should have installed it.
Well, not necessarily. If it's DOS only, there's no auto run on it.
No, the DOS was the original birth of the computer, and then it was changed to Window 95.
Yeah, when Dave says it's relatively easy, he means for somebody like him who owns a shop and can fix it
Well, where?
In a very quick
We're on Brighton Henrietta Town Line Road. It's called Enright PC Management.
Enright?
Enright PC Management.
And some DOS games will work okay in Windows.
Right.
Yeah.
Many won't, and there's no way to tell until you try.
When you bring the system down, bring the disk too.
Used to in 95 create PIF files. Remember that?
Right.
Whoa.
Right. But bring it down. Bring it and bring the disk with you, so whoever it is can see what's going on. Okie doke. Thanks a lot. Our next caller is Bill from Shilai. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I picked up a virus. I have an IBM Aptiva running Windows 98, and Norton identified the files that were infected, and they were quarantined, and it suggested that I try to restore those files, and when I put my restore disk in, it says those files are not present there.
Well,
I guess
they've been quarantined.
Well, it also depends on what the files are.
Yeah.
If they're if they're not Windows system files,
they
can't be restored.
Needed.
Right. I guess my question is, do I need to worry about restoring them?
Well, it depends on what they are. Do you know what programs they're from?
The one file is from the Windows directory kak.htm.
A good one to get rid of. That is a virus.
That is the virus.
Okay.
You don't want to restore that.
Okay. And the other file is Windows System 3E7C0.hta.
Ditto.
Okay.
Delete it.
So just delete them?
Mm-hmm. Just delete them. You don't want them. Don't ever get them back again. Make sure your antivirus is updated and running all the time.
Okay, great.
But that's part of the trick, is you have to know what the files are to know whether they're restorable or you should just delete them right out.
Yeah.
In this case, just get rid of them.
Right. Okay, great.
Thank you very much. Our next caller is Mason from Honey Eye. Welcome, Mason.
Hi. I've been downloading MP3s for about a year now, and I used Napster at first, until that didn't work. And
until you had to pay for it.
Hmm?
Until you had to pay for it.
Right. And then I used Aimster.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work anymore.
Because you have to pay for it.
Right. So what do you advise me to use now?
LimeWire is a good one.
Yeah, I tried that, but it had a system error when I tried to unstuff.
And the other is...
What operating system do you run?
9.1 on a Power Mac, iMac. OS 9.1.
You have to watch what version of LimeWire you download, because there's specific versions for 9 and 10.
Said it would be compatible with 8.5 or higher, the LimeWire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's possible that you have bad downloads, or it's possible that you need a newer version of Unstuff It, particularly if they're actually zipped. Uh-huh. Most stuff from LimeWire isn't zipped at all. They're just plain MP3s. You should be able to play them.
The LimeWire installer itself. It could be a bad download, or it could be in a newer version of Stuff It than you have.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have to try re-downloading it. Did you know offhand what version of Stuff It you have?
No.
There was a major change in file format from 4 to 5.
Okay.
So if you only have version 4, it won't work to unstuff a version 5 format. You may have to update that.
Okay.
Dave is also mentioning there's another program called BearShare, but I don't know offhand if they have a Mac version.
I don't think they do.
You might want to check. What's the other one?
Nutella is Nutella. The network that LimeWire runs a client into.
There used to be one called Maxter. But I think that's gone.
Well, right. Maxter was a Mac version of the Napster client.
And there was a Mactella that I tried, but I could connect to it,
mm-hmm.
and then I'd search for something, and the results never came up.
Right.
Well, part of the issue is that most of what's on systems like that are illegal in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the client softwares will only go to legal download sites. An example for music files, a lot of the music publishers, like Warner Brothers and whatnot, will publish a piece of a song that you're supposed to then like and then buy the album. So some of the clients look for only legal download sites.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Is there another program, like is there a website that you can download them off of?
If you go to Nutella.org, Nutella, you'll see a list of all of the clients for all of the operating systems.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Our next caller, Nick from Brighton. Welcome, Nick. What's your question?
I'm trying to get the Dvorak keyboard to work with Windows 3.1, and it's telling me I need a kbddv.dll.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea on how I could get that? Or
that is supposed to be on your system, but...
Yeah. It's telling me to insert IBM WinOS 2 disk at 5.
Yeah, you've got to do reinstall.
Are you running under OS 2?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I think now we divert to Nick because he's the only one that uses it.
What's the name of the file?
kbddv.dll.
Have you tried giving it the disk it's asking for?
Yeah.
But sometimes it might be on one disk or the other. Sometimes it takes a guesstimate, and depending on what version, you might want to try disk 4 or disk 6.
Okay.
Because I've run into that a lot. You know, it thinks it knows what disk it's on, and it could be off a disk or two.
Okay.
Or you can just try them all. How many were there for OS 2? 40 what? Or 50?
Yeah.
How many floppy disks were there in the OS 2 install? A lot.
I'm sorry, we're done. We're done for another week. But we're going to be back next Saturday at 12:20 p.m. And I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. And, of course, Rob Linton, who keeps us straight on the buttons. And I'm Nick Francesco. We will be back here next Saturday at 12:20 on America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, only and always on 1180 WHAM.